IABC Ottawa presents The Voice.
The Voice offers expert insights and practical takeaways for people in the marketing communications industry.
We're sharing the latest ideas and issues with sector professionals.
What can we do to help you take your career to the next level?
I am Tina Barton, and this is The Voice. I just think that's really amazing, the concept that women are doing Kegel exercises by playing a video game. I mean, are they killing aliens every time they do a Kegel exercise, or how does this work?
To make an idea successful is to work collaboratively with others that have the resources.
I'm Heidi Fanda, and I'm based in Ottawa. I work full-time for the Ontario Primary Healthcare Program as an educational technologist, and in my spare time, I founded the Hacking Health chapter here in Ottawa. We lead the Health Innovation Program with our passionate volunteers and our partners.
My name is Anira Montagne. I am Canadian, naturalized Brazilian. I dedicate myself full-time to Hacking Health Global as Director of International Development and Chapters Liaison. I am based in Brasilia, Brazil.
Hello to you both, and thanks for joining me and our listeners of The Voice. Today on the show, we're looking forward to learning what Hacking Health is and does, some of your communications challenges as a nonprofit, and your strategies for overcoming these and growing the Hacking Health movement from its seeds in Montreal to worldwide. And thanks to our listeners for tuning in. And of course, thank you to our podcast producer and sponsor, Thornley Fellis, an integrated communications agency in Canada. So to kick off the episode, let's set some context. What is Hacking Health? When was it founded and what problem was it created to solve?
Thank you so much for having us. Hacking Health is a global nonprofit. We're in 21 countries all across the world and share the vision to improve healthcare. So we do this by breaking down the silos to healthcare innovation, by bridging together healthcare professionals, the techies, designers, business innovators, and we often do this by holding themed hands-on workshops, talks, and hackathons. And this is where we identify problems and we work together to develop solutions. So our focus is to build community, share knowledge, enable collaborative action, accelerate impact through partnerships, and transform systems that deliver healthcare around us.
Awesome. And it's a network of volunteers, as I understand. Is that correct?
Absolutely. So we are 100% volunteer run.
I think when people hear the word hacking or hacking health, or at least I did, it made me think that it would be a lot of techie people who are coding in basements. But it sounds like it's obviously much broader than that.
That's it, Tina. We have a community. We really call our community a community of problem solvers. And problem solvers come in all different forms. We have communicators on board. We have designers that specialize in UI, UX. We have physicians, nurses, business analysts, health policy analysts, regulators. Our community profits from having so many different types of skills.
And today you're joining us from Ottawa, Heidi, and we have Annie joining us from Brazil. How many countries is Hacking Health in now?
So Hacking Health is in 21 countries. In Canada, of course, it was where Hacking Health was born. It's in all the provinces, but very quickly it went to Europe, spread across Western Europe. And in the last years, we've seen the Hacking Health movement also take roots in initiatives in emergent economies in third world countries. So we can say we're present on the five continents and really address together common healthcare problems, but also very local ones at the same time.
And that's really interesting because I think you're only 5 years old, and it's quite rare for something to start in one country and spread to 21 countries within 5 years. How did you make that happen?
Well, it's a long story, but at the same time, it's a simple one. We start always addressing the needs of that healthcare professionals and patients identify in their own community. So we make sure that it's very relevant for the communities. We build on existing initiatives, but more than anything, we break the silos between the medical research and the startup solutions that are coming up. So really create spaces and bridges between the medical and tech community with the participation of people who also have these skills of building bridges, communicating, and seeing what is the common interest when we talk about public health, and on the other side, make this movement grow for the benefit of the population.
I'd love to hear from both of you why you got involved with Hacking Health to start with. What motivated you?
So years ago, I worked at a fertility clinic in research and design. And one of my main projects was to improve adherence to in vitro treatment. And this was to help women and their partners manage stress. We realized that a lot of them were dropping out of treatment because the treatment was so stressful. I realized very quickly that the interventions that we were developing weren't convenient and they weren't personal enough to address the challenges we were experiencing. And that's what got me interested in exploring technology, apps, computer-mediated solutions to deliver some of the programs we were developing. So I went to my first hackathon, which is a 48-hour event where people come together that have different skill sets with the goal of building a prototype to solve a problem. This was in Montreal. And I saw people coming together with so many different backgrounds working really effectively and passionately to create impact. So what would get done in an institution or a clinic, it would probably take maybe 1 to 2 years to develop something that I saw developed this weekend. And the methodology was so genius that I was hooked.
That's wonderful. And Annie, how about you?
In my case, I knew the co-founder and current director, Luc Serrois, and he's truly an inspiring leader. I volunteered for the core team to help him out while I was doing my PhD. And just suddenly, he invited me to my first hackathon also. In my case, it was in Strasbourg at the Hacking Health Camp, which is actually the biggest health hackathon in Europe. It got me 100% involved with many chapter leaders, even before I stepped in as in 2015 as chapter relations coordinator. So in my case, community building and bridging the gap between the tech and medical communities are really my main drivers.
Excellent. So you've mentioned the word hackathon a few times, and people who haven't heard of Hacking Health before might think that it centers around hackathons and event-based meetups. But I know from chatting with you both that that's not the case. So perhaps you could explain what Hacking Health involves year-round.
So here in Ottawa, we've launched a health innovation program. And as the word program suggests, it's really meant to be a series of sequential events that lead up to our capstone hackathon. And then there's post-hackathon support, which comes in with mentorship, with seed funding, making sure that these ideas really, really are successful. And so we work really hard to create really strong partnerships with hospitals and tech institutions and governmental bodies. We find that the best way to make an idea successful is to work collaboratively with others that have the resources and the interest to also push and prod the vision of moving healthcare forward.
That makes sense. So in other words, partner with organizations and institutions that are already in the health space, but not just the health space, also technology firms that have the capacity for building apps or whatever you need, maybe even communications firms that could help out with some of the marketing and branding you need.
Exactly.
And tell me, when you approach institutions like CHEO in Ottawa, you come to them saying, we're a nonprofit movement that's here to help healthcare innovation. What kind of reception do you get?
Often hospitals are under-resourced. So the idea that there is a nonprofit out there, you know, with a group of 100% passionate volunteers that have many skill sets that is willing to help them solve some of their more perennial problems they experience, it's exciting. I would say it really depends on the leadership within the hospital. As you can imagine, there is a risk when you're taking on deciding to work with a group. You really, really want to know that they have a history and a track record, and we're lucky that we've grown so quickly because we do have this.
I'd love to hear from you both, and I'm sure the listeners would too. It always helps to center a story in something personal. So if you could each share your favorite story of how Hacking Health has helped someone.
I'd like to share a story that emerged actually at the hackathon that I first went to in Montreal. And it was a mobile app that was developed by a speech language pathologist who had pitched the problem. And her problem was that as a speech language pathologist, she needed to get a sample of a child's speech. So we'll call the child Sarah. Sarah and her mother, Anna, would wait for an appointment to see a speech language pathologist. It would take a long time. Anna finally gets an appointment for her daughter, Sarah. She brings her in. She's ready to get that sample. And her daughter is quiet. She's really shy. She's in an unknown environment at the hospital, and she's expected to speak. So as a speech language pathologist, this can be challenging because you're not able to get that rich sample that you require in order to do an assessment. So she came and she pitched this problem on a Friday, and by Sunday, a prototype was developed. And the goal of the prototype was to record your child's speech prior to the speech language pathologist's visit in the hospital. How wonderful. You can record it in the comfort of your own home just by using an app. Mm-hmm. The other great aspect was it would transcribe the dialogue. So that would actually streamline the assessment time. And I believe the assessment would take around 40 to 60 minutes, and this brought it down to around 20 minutes. And the other outcome was it created a huge potential for research. So now you have this digital database of children's speeches that researchers could use to further mine and develop further their research.
That's excellent. And Annie, what's your favorite story?
So I think the first hackathon has really a big impact on us because my example is also from the one I attended in Strasbourg. The project name is Emmy Get the Control. It was actually a combination of software and hardware solution to help millions of women who suffer from incontinence after giving birth or for other reasons. These women have to take care of their child and at the same time, or have suffered a loss, and at the same time have to do Kegel exercises, very boring. It's difficult. And when rehab is slow, it involves many personal problems. It affects the mental health of women, and rehab is slow. It is difficult to know why. Is it the patient who's at Is she doing really the exercises or lying to the therapist? Or maybe she's doing the exercise, but how do we know they're properly done? And is the patient motivated? So it's difficult to assess this during the appointment. So basically, the in-body hardware sensors would measure the quantity and the strength of the muscle contractions while the patient actually plays a video game on an app. Why? Because the video game has different levels. It triggers a bit of motivation, but the motivating trick really is that the space shuttle in the video game is actually fueled and propelled by the perineum contraction. So it seems I'm even uneasy to speak about this in a foreign language, but when we know that millions of women in all countries have to deal with this situation, we know we have a real impact when we do something. And I wanted to stress that in this case, it was a physiotherapist who was leading the project. So it's not only doctors that are identifying the needs, the nurses, the speech therapists. So many of the paramedic professions are also involved, and of course the patients or patients association. So really there's an impact on a larger group of people. The last thing I wanted to say is we are a volunteer organization, but the volunteers are very qualified. Healthcare professionals have studied years to get there. The coders, sometimes they're young students. They've been coding for 10, 12 years sometimes. So you see they admire the neurosurgeon, but you see that the doctor also looks at these young guys and women. There's a lot of women coding as well. They actually are able to materialize the solution in a weekend. So there's this mutual admiration between both groups that make intergenerational work possible. This is beautiful. And also, this is a process of co-creation. I think this is the most important.
I just think that's really amazing, the concept that women are doing Kegel exercises by playing a video game. I mean, are they killing aliens every time they do a Kegel exercise? Or how does this work? I think it's fantastic.
No, it's just actually a parkour, let's say.
And, oh, wow.
It's like a traditional video game. You just have a way to get there. If you're able to do level one, then you progress to level two, and then it will just ask you to be stronger and to use more repetitions and so on, just to have concrete result. But at the same time, the doctor during the appointment will get the chip with a graph of the movements that were done and can really focus on the problems or the appropriate contractions, movement that have to be made. So during the appointment, they're really focusing on what needs to be improved so there are concrete results.
I just think this illustrates why the value of the nonprofit sector, because I really have a hard time imagining a hospital on its own coming up with this brilliant concept of video games for Kegel exercises.
Yes, it was actually a midwife that shared the problem with the physiotherapist. She says, well, if you guys come up with a solution for this, you will help so many women, because that was what she was struggling with. So this is very important, the needs-based problem. And this is the really comes before any hackathon, or that's why we do ideation workshops and take time to talk to the healthcare professional and the patients to know more about the real challenges on the floor from people who feel the problem in their own skin.
Mm-hmm. It's just like any kind of communication strategy or program, always asking. It's always better off if you start with the question of what is the problem we're trying to solve and who are we trying to help? So I see some parallels here, which brings me to, you're a nonprofit organization. There surely is a big need to communicate and reach the people that you're trying to help, but also to attract more people to your movement. As the nonprofit that you are, what are your biggest communications challenges? And I'm asking from the nonprofit angle because we have listeners coming from the nonprofit space. So I thought it'd be helpful to identify what yours are. Maybe they're unique and maybe some of them are common and some of our listeners can relate to that, but then hear some of your solutions to addressing these issues.
Nonprofits face a significant challenge in marketing and communications in general. And that's because they're often under-resourced due to size. So I'd have to say for Ottawa, our weakest kind of limb would be communications. And mainly because it takes time to develop a communications plan and then implement it. As I mentioned, and all of our local chapters are 100% run through volunteer efforts. So here, some of the main challenges have been to recruit communication professionals that have the skills to be able to develop communication plans, and also having the human resources to implement the communication plans, whether that is social media marketing, whether that is creating our key messages, and so on.
Sometimes the healthcare professionals, they don't have storytelling skills. And so they're specialists at, you know, their work, the work they're doing in the clinics or in the hospital. And we need help sometimes there's always a pitch clinic. We need mentors, people who help projects, winning projects after, to pitch their story and get more support. But also as a movement, we have a few success stories on the website. But I have pages and pages of contacts and stories to be told of some startups that have made it through, but mainly incredible partnerships and amazing team and individual stories. And we know that together we would be stronger, but how would we communicate this better? Sometimes the chapters come up with hacking health. They're innovating in the way we can communicate about hacking health. And Dutch Hacking Health actually started last year Hacking Health Radio, that had never been before. So the first broadcast was in English. It's a country where everyone is bilingual. They interviewed half of our chapter leaders across the world. So it's an amazing resource that we had.
That's excellent. And this radio broadcast, is it available online? Can people tune in from around the world and hear it?
Yes, yes. It's available online, and the link can be found on our hackinghealth.ca website, going through the Dutch Hacking Health chapters.
And what other communications tools do you use to raise awareness locally, but also globally?
So that was another initiative from a chapter. Monterrey is in northern Mexico. It's led by doctors and biomedical engineers and staff actually from the local hospitals. And they realized that in their meetups, in the workshop, there was a true problem of common understanding of the terminology. It's a different way of speaking, sometimes the same words, sometimes unknown words, in the medical community and in the tech community. So to address this, they started a website called AccessiMed. So it's accessimed.com. It's a kind of wiki of medical and tech terminology to really to facilitate interdisciplinary understanding. That was a good start. Now it's in Spanish. That's what they need. But the ambition is really to turn it a multilingual tool that all the chapters and the bigger world community could use as well. At HH Global, we also develop other tools to address this different terminology. We organize internal webinars for chapter leaders, and we talk about community building, about these challenges. We also present Hacking Health digital tools and how we can address these challenges. And it's the same thing for hospital innovation platforms that actually integrate tech people in their own internal project.
And Heidi, how about you? How have you managed your communications on a shoestring budget? How have you decided where to focus your energies?
So initially we started with all the common communication channels just to get the word out. With local chapters, our communication is really about sharing the program that we're doing, sharing the events that we're doing, sharing the great relationships that we're building in the city. And we use Twitter, we use Facebook. In the past, we used Instagram, we used Snapchat. We really tackled everything, even blogging. And with our limited resources, we realized earlier on that we wouldn't be able to be very active on all these channels. So we started to use the metrics behind these tools a little bit more effectively, looking at how many clicks we had on our stories or our newsletter, looking at how many likes and shares we were having on Twitter, and really understanding who our audience was. Are they the millennials? Are they the seasoned professionals? Are they the folks that prefer blogs? Once we understood who our audience was, we were able to dwindle down our channels to just a few things. So we found that our audience, they are active on Twitter, they're active on Facebook and blogging. And those are the channels that we've focused on. And now we're able to create a communication plan around that. We have a posting schedule for what has to go out. Because we're a program, we have all of this information in advance, which is helpful. We're able to draw on our community of experts and ask them to be guest writers for our newsletters. So really being creative, looking at who's already within our community and what stories they want to share. We've also found that being part of a global network is really powerful. We have a community Slack channel and a global Slack channel, which is essentially an online tool where we communicate with our Hacking Health Global. And so if we're having a really big event, maybe it's a program launch, maybe it's we're trying to get the attention of our local politicians, we'll develop a hashtag, we'll share it with our internal leads and invite them to repost it, retweet it, interact with us online. And that's been tremendous.
I can add maybe that from the beginning at Hacking Health Global, we worked with talented designers and had a consistent visual image, a brand, design guidelines. Of course, I talked about the diversity of chapters. Not all of them have an in-house designer all the time. So we try to provide support, but we do it very open source. If there's a great poster from Ottawa, we'll share it and people will adapt it, will inspire themselves. I would also like to invite people to see our playlist on YouTube because the teaser, promo, and recap videos of the events have been fundamental to really translate in 2 minutes what is the spirit of Hacking Health. So we try to make up for the lack of designers or communicators in every single chapter. But of course, when you have a professional on board, we see immediately the difference. It's a big challenge. We know that our outreach could really multiply if we had more people and tools in action, and this is where we're heading.
And when we were having our side conversation, Heidi, you also mentioned something, a strategy you've been using, which I thought was really smart and would be widely applicable to our listeners, and that's your influencer strategy. You were telling me that when you host events, you scope out the influencers, the most influential people that have like the biggest social media following, and you make a point of identifying those people. And then when they come to your event, you're ready to recognize them and you make a special effort of welcoming them and making them aware that how much you appreciate their presence there.
I'm smiling on the other end because, yes, that strategy, I can tell you it works. What we've done is we always get the list of who's attending, and I make it my job to get to know everyone on the list. And it's so easy these days because we have LinkedIn and other tools. You can just Google someone's name and really know, you know, what their background is and just start to imagine why they might be at your event. And that's actually how the CHEO collaboration emerged. There was an advisor and a C-level that came to our event, and I walked right over to them and I introduced myself and I told them who they were. And I thank them for being here there. And they were, initially I thought, oh my goodness, will I creep them out? But they really appreciated it. So, you know, getting to know who your influentials are is very important. And so what we do is we grab their Twitter handles. If they're active on Twitter, we'll make sure that they're recognized on our Twitter wall, and we'll interact with them before the event, during the event, after the event. And that really magnetizes it helps with retweets and getting additional recognition of what's happening and what we're doing in Ottawa.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's brilliant. And you've spoken about being needs-based and about being a patient-centric movement. So I was curious to know how many patients you have volunteering in your network.
So I would say some countries are better at it because it's a philosophy. Dutch Hacking Health, for example, even developed the patients included label. So patients are involved from the first day of planning. They're emceeing the event. They're in every single team. In other cities and other chapters, we encourage it, but it's not always possible. Sometimes I've seen the problem pitched even by video because the patient was not able to communicate his needs verbally or being physically at the event. But we know that if we have the healthcare professional or the patient on board, it will be concrete.
Coming close to our hackathon, which is really, really a wonderful and the most, I would say, exciting event. It's a three-day event happening April 28th, and we invite everybody and anyone to come to participate. And really, really, it's the participation that brings the most of your experience there. It's when you're getting your hands dirty, you're developing personas, you're sketching out designs of the problem. And that will be done, again, all to solve some of the most perennial problems that they're experiencing at CHEO, Ottawa Children's Treatment Center, to help children and their families.
Yeah, so tell us what happens in a hackathon event. Because I'm sure most people just picture a bunch of dudes crammed around a basement table on their laptops coding away. And I know from our conversation today and also our previous chat too, that it's much bigger than that. It's like an experiential session where you're identifying the problems and then you're working together to find the solution. And now I feel like I've briefly answered my own question, but obviously you run these things and you're immersed in it. So I'd love for you to paint us a picture of how these hackathons take form.
So some hackathons actually involve no technology. For the one that's going to be happening in Ottawa, the goal there is to actually build out a prototype. So what will happen is on Friday, we're inviting the community, that is engaged citizens, anyone on the healthcare front, designers, developers, communicators, business analysts, anyone and everyone.
And speaking of that, what's on the agenda for the global hacking health movement, Annie, in the coming months?
So for the listeners who are not able to make it to Ottawa the last weekend of April, we have 48 hackathons planned around the world this year. So really, you can look at our website, hackinghelp.ca. The events page will list the confirmed hackathon. And you can always contact us through the contact form and ask what is happening near my home. Because either there's a group already planning something, we can connect you to the local organizers, or we can even consider working together to form a core team and start something in your community.
Well, I want to thank you both very much for taking the time to join us today. Heidi in Ottawa, Canada, and Annie from Brasilia in Brazil. It's been really interesting hearing about what Hacking Health does, what it hopes to accomplish. And I think it's a really good fit for our voice audience, because hopefully there are people listening thinking, wow, I too share a passion for improving health outcomes. And gosh, I know communication really well, and I'd like to get involved. And if that's the case, I invite the listeners, as we all do, to look up the Hacking Health website, and Annie will be all too happy to hear from you. Thanks again for joining us. The Voice is produced here in Ottawa, Canada. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. Thanks to Amanda Speroni for mixing this episode. She's with Thornley Fellis, an integrated communications agency serving clients across North America. Make sure to visit ottawa.iabc.com for more about the show and related resources, including what you've heard today about Hacking Health. IABC Ottawa is the voice of Ottawa's marketing and communications industry. And I'm your host, Tina Barton. Connect with me on LinkedIn and Twitter at Tina M. Barton. Thanks for listening, and please do join us again next time.